Welcome to Day Zero Update for September 22nd, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
And yeah, we've got a big week of news here.
Yep.
A bunch of things have happened. We got a big lawsuit between Nintendo and, say, another company that made a Pokemon-style game.
Yep.
We got some more news on the Flappy Bird situation.
Yeah, we
found out a little more about why that's not quite what we thought it was last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got some news on Skate, the return of Skate. Some games that are coming out in the near future, mm-hmm. as well as, let's just say, an interesting Like a Dragon spinoff that I don't think anybody expected.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, before we get to all of that news here, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I will kick it off here. I've been playing some of the Plucky Squire.
Yep.
I am a few chapters in on that, enjoying it so far. It is very much a more of a story focused kind of top down Zelda ish kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
Where you are playing as the Plucky Squire, who has been a big writer, I guess, and has written tons of successful books and such about the their escapades and all that. And kind of changes a bit when, let's say, the bad guy that always loses ends up finding a way to cheat and win,
mm-hmm.
Particularly by knocking the Plucky Squire out of the storybook that he is in and into... Mm-hmm. The real world, which is this desk that this kid has, full of a bunch of, school supplies and junk and whatnot. You manage to find your way back in, but yeah, you're kind of basically jumping back and forth at a certain point to solve puzzles or take out some enemies or whatever, it needs of you. I'm just getting into the part where that's becoming a regular part of the level design for that, as you're kind of going to this one area where it's like, oh, you're off script. You've never been here before. So best of luck with that. So yeah, the combat's been pretty decent so far, though. I feel like maybe the one thing that takes a bit of getting used to is that your attacks on enemies don't necessarily knock them back. Or stun them, like cancel out their attack they're about to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's enemies that say shoot stuff at you or do attacks, and you kind of need to be very careful about that lest you lose a bunch of your health.
Yep.
Though in Zelda fashion, there's lots of bushes and such that will drop hearts when you break them. So it's not really too big of an issue, but so far I've not died yet on anything, so that's not been a big deal. The puzzles have been pretty solid so far, though it's a lot of tutorial stuff so far.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of getting things that are kind of pretty obvious for what you need to do. But they do play around with the medium that the game is presented in as part of the storybook. So there's like a neat section early on where you need to get down this cliff, and the book turns sideways so that it is going lengthwise down the page for like a platforming section kind of stuff. And it does a lot of fun stuff with that kind of way that the way that everything is presented on this really nice kind of looking paper in this like storybook thing. So that's a really cool aspect of it, is the presentation and the art, which is all really fantastic. So, you do get a good bit of voice acting early on, though the part I'm at, there's none. So, it definitely feels like, oh, we couldn't do that for everything in the game, which is fine. But yeah, it's a little bit jarring once you reach that point. Like a lot of JRPGs would do for a while, where it's like, oh, you first few hours, it's going to be fully voiced. But then at a certain point, when it gets going, you're just looking at text, so kind of takes you out of it a little bit, because the voice acting has been pretty good so far for each of the characters. But yeah, So yeah, that's The Plucky Squire. It's out on everything, I believe, and especially on PlayStation Plus Extra. So that one's worth checking out. The other game I got this week is UFO 50. This is the new game from Mossmouth, Derek Yu, the maker of Spelunky. This has been his project he's been working on for at least a few years now, where it is sort of a collaboration between him and a bunch of developer friends where they have made this fake retro collection of a bunch of old 80s games that are... the way the interface has it framed is it's kind of like a maybe an Apple IIe kind of old PC thing that all the games are on like floppy drives kind of thing, which like an Apple IIe was like a computer monitor that stacked up on top of like disk drives on top of a keyboard kind of thing. The way that that was kind of how PCs looked back in the day, is they just kind of stacked themselves on top of the keyboard that housed most of your components. And that's kind of the glimpse you get when you start up the game, is that kind of PC. It's called like the 2X, I think. And yeah, the game itself has 50 games in it, ranging from, I think, like 83 to 89, as a collection of games made by this one company that kind of changes names a couple of times. There's a little bit of story for each of the games where you push a button to bring up a bunch of information about it. You know, I'll tell you basic gameplay description, controls, and various like stats based on how much you've played it and various things you've done. But the last one gives you like flavor text for lore on the game's development. And that is a pretty cool aspect of the game, as you learn like, oh, these are games made by like a handful of people and that were working on business software, but moved to making games, and they make a lot of stuff here that's very much taking after a lot of games of its era, though some have the vibes of like more modern indie games that style themselves with the retro vibes to it. But like the first one I played is very much like a very classic old school kind of PC game, where it's technically like a platformer of sorts, a single screen platformer, where you're going around this map, and as you find little paths to go to other parts of the map, you kind of load into those. You're kind of seeing like trying to get around the map and find like treasure that can maybe make you either get a higher score or do more stuff. It's a little bit tough to gather a lot of that information right away. There's a lot of trial and error on some of that stuff. And yeah, they don't go the like modern retro collection as far as having like save states and rewind and that kind of stuff. It's all kind of just these games as they are trying to being presented as they were, I guess. But a lot of games do keep track, like autosave your progress for the ones that it makes sense that they would, whereas others are kind of arcade-y, like high score focused ones where you're just trying out to get better at the game. Like there's one early on, I forget what the name is, but it's like a Goemon arcade style game. So you're kind of this ninja that is going around attacking enemies, throwing your ninja stars at enemies. They'll drop eggs that give you points, and special ones drop power-ups that will upgrade your ninja stars, either be faster, get you a longer distance throw, that kind of stuff. And that's just pure going for a high score on the leaderboard, which I've played a decent bit of that and gotten up to like fifth place on the local leaderboard. I don't believe this has any sort of online leaderboard stuff, which is a bit of a shame. I would like to have that as an option so that you can see like how ridiculous some people are going to get as good at this game as you can. But yeah, it's I've been kind of playing through chronologically. It has a bunch of options for sorting. You can sort based on like how much you've played them, or chronologically, alphabetically. There's at least a few others that are probably more based on how much you've done in the game. There's reference to something of a garden, I guess, that if you complete special goals in each game, you get, you do unlock something for a garden or whatever it is. It might be another game in there, but I don't know. But yeah, I've still working my way around. There's been some really cool stuff. There's like a cool little like racing game that's almost like I forget what the Namco arcade racing game was, but like one of those kind of top-down racing games, but you're painting the floor as you're going, and you get some power-ups that can shoot a bunch of paint around, so you're trying to get more than, you know, 50% or whatever the goal is for that stage, and try and beat the AIs, which you can, you know, run into them and destroy the cars to help you out, but it's definitely a lot of hectic kind of arcadey action. There's like a golf game that I would say kind of plays a bit like Kirby's Dream Course, but it's more kind of like a freeform Metroid-y version of that. We got this big map that you're kind of hitting your golf ball around on, but you only have like 20 strokes you can use to get around on, but you have to take out enemies to refill it. So there's a lot of unique takes on styles of games, but also some that are very much in the vein of classic kind of games. That is really cool. And yeah, just a lot of great artwork here for these various games. So I'll definitely be playing some more of this. I have played some on a PC and my Steam Deck that it works pretty well on all that. So yeah, looking forward to playing some more of that. But yeah, that's been a cool collection. That is, I think, got a launch discount right now at $22.49. Regularly, it's $25, which is still a pretty good price because these aren't like mini game collections. They're not like Mario Party mini games. They're sort of fully realized games, but may not be as you know, long to play as, you know, a regular game would be. Though this was the era of games where you might pay a good penny for these games, but
oh yeah,
they might only be like a couple hours long. But there's supposed to be like an actual JRPG in here. It's probably got a decent amount of hours in it. But yeah, it's some pretty cool stuff. So yeah, definitely looking forward to put some more time into that. And then also been putting a little more time into Astrobot. Been working a lot this week, so I haven't been able to beat it to any, so I'm still working my way through it. But still enjoying it a lot. But yeah, that's been pretty much all I've been doing. So Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, I also have been playing the Plucky Squire, and yeah, that game is actually very charming and very enjoyable, a lot of fun. Do kind of have some pacing issues with it, but that has less to do with more than anything than just sort of, you know, how the game actually plays. So, you know, other than that, it's a really charming game. Really loving, just it's really fun, really enjoying it. And honestly, it's a kind of game I've been wanting to play for a long time. Like you said, you know, we don't want to go into too much into it because part of the fun of the game is the surprise to it. But yeah, and you mentioned Astrobot. I have, I actually finished Astrobot a couple of days ago. I platinumed it, and yeah, that obviously with a game that has so many fun highlights to it, the final boss section is definitely one of them because the game basically turns into like a shmup, basically, where you're riding your little DualSense controller jet thing, and you're sort of fighting all these little aliens that the big mucus alien sort of has. And every so often, you have to link up with some of the other bots who are basically writing all the giant pieces of PlayStation hardware that was in the Labo Museum in Astro's playroom. So, you know, the controllers, the memory cards, the consoles, all that stuff. And every so often, you'll link up into them to increase your firepower. And yeah, it's just overall really fun. So I managed to get all of the 300 bots, or in my case, it was 304 because I got the extra bots that were added in Playroom. And once you do that, you are given one last challenge level, which is basically a combination of all of the of elements from all of the previous challenge levels that you've gone on to, the ones that revolve around the various PS buttons. And that is probably the single hardest level in the entire game. Not only because it contains elements of all the previous challenge levels, but just like with all challenge levels, there are no checkpoints. If you die, you have to go all the way back. So it took about 10 or 12 tries going through it before I finally beat it. And you get one last very special bot at the very end of it. And honestly, it's the perfect choice for it. You know, he's kind of a meme and he's very much beloved by PlayStation fans. And it would be obvious that he would probably be the last guy that you end up getting at the very end, but he is the last one, and he is just awesome. So yeah, that game was amazing. I'm gonna still keep hold of it because there's gonna be some DLC coming soon, and I want to get what they're getting there. But once I finished that, I went ahead and started playing Night in the Woods because that was released on PS Plus, and that is a game I have played before, a lot of it. I really like that game. I never got around to finishing it, however, so I decided, you know, now it's on console, I can just go ahead and do that now. And yeah, that game is a, you know, it's one of those games where it's not only really charming and funny, it's also just so painfully relatable, especially if you're a older millennial. Because it takes place in a Rust Belt town where all the jobs are going away and all the, you know, the stuff that you loved growing up is closing down and moving out of town. And well, and there's like a whole adult populace that just doesn't understand that things are changing. So, and obviously there's some slightly more sinister supernatural stuff happening underneath it. And once again, it's just really funny. It's a very specific type of humor, so I understand if it's not funny to some people, but it's definitely my kind of humor. And I also upgraded my PS Plus membership to premium, so I would have access to a bunch of the older games. And because I was inspired by Astro Bot, I decided to play the original Ape Escape. And that was a bad decision. Not because the game is bad, but because Ape Escape was made back in the day when 3D platformers were still a novelty. And much like with a lot of the games from that time period, the camera is not, you know, bound to, you know, one of the DualSense controllers. No. You have to use the D-pad in order to move the camera around, which is, as you can imagine, can be a bit of a pain in the ass. And also, like a lot of those early 3D platformers, you have to deal with things like pop-up, because the graphics, you know, still weren't up to the point where they could load all that stuff without you without it, you know, just sort of popping into view. But otherwise, still a pretty fun, solid platformer from the era. But yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news. And first up here, there are new additions to Game Pass, though I think all of these are already out at this point. Maybe one or two are not, but let's see. For September 19th, yeah, a few days ago, for console and PC, there's Wargroove 2, which is for Ultimate and PC Game Pass. I guess we got to mention that now because it's not all these new releases, but It is in, I think, preview mode for that. But that is one of the indie Advanced Wars style games. So yeah, I remember liking the first one a good bit. So that's one to check out for September 20th. Let's see, there's Frostpunk 2 for the PC. For Game Pass Ultimate and PC Game Pass. I know that's one you're looking forward to, but when it's not on, just on PC, when it's on console. But yeah, that's another one. Let's see. This one's coming out in a couple days on PC Game Pass and Game Pass Ultimate. Aura History Untold. That one's just for PC as well. That is the... Yeah, the game from Oxide Games, it's basically their take on a Civilization. I think one of the big changes is there's no hex grid or anything. So that's a bit of a change. So yeah, that's one you can check out here later this week. And that's it. I assume that might be it for the rest of this month. I don't know. But that's all they've announced here. Just advertising it, like Starfield's expansion comes out on the 30th. You can check out EA Sports FC 25 in early access before it launches later this week. Let's see, that's about it mentioned here. Yeah, so yeah, that's Game Pass, a couple things there to check out. Next up here, Nintendo Switch Online had some additions for the Super Nintendo app. Four new games, one that was already released here, three that are Japanese exclusives. First up, Battletoads Double Dragon, the combination of those two well-known franchises. I did a stream playing all four of these games, and that one might have been the worst of them all, because I don't think that holds up at all anymore. Yeah, I played as the Billy, I think. I forget which one of the Double Dragon guys. And the main difference that they have from the Battletoads is that they have like an elbow drop thing, attack. And the enemies are just not fun to fight at all. First boss is a Bobo, which is a classic Double Dragon boss, though he just beats the shit out of you until you figure out the one attack that works, which is you have to do a air kick, but you have to do it on the way up before you hit the peak of your jump. Otherwise, you're just going to get the shit beat out of you. It's like one specific type of attack. God forbid if you try to kick at the peak of your jump or on the way down, that will not work. Luckily, that's a game that has all these have, you know, save states and rewind, so you get the crap beat out of you. You can just rewind and try again, but it's just, it's not a very interesting or fun game. But yeah. So yeah, like Turtles in Time was much better. It was a beat 'em up, more. More variety between the different characters and all that. And just a more fun campaign. This one, I played a decent bit and it just didn't really get much better at a certain point. But yeah. The next up here, we got Big Run, or as its titles on the box art, Jellico Rally Big Run, the Supreme Four-Wheel Drive Challenge. This is a game based on, I think, one of the big endurance run races. I think it might be the Dakar Rally that goes over Northern Africa. And so this is kind of a point-to-point race where you're doing, I think, like nine stages. And you're basically carrying spare parts to replace your tires and engines and whatnot that get worn out, as well as you kind of upfront pick a crew. Which it doesn't really tell you what any of that means, but this is a game that's perfect for save states, because if you, it gives you a time that you have to beat on the leg of the race you're doing, and if you don't beat it, you have to start all over again. So it's that kind of replay value to it. Pretty solid racing. It's very Outrun-ish kind of racing, though you don't have any boost or anything. You just have a higher low gear to swap between, which I didn't realize at first. So I was just driving on low gear and just literally going way too slow. So you kind of have to pick your points of like, oh, there's nothing going on. I'll go high, and turns come up, and you're like, oh, I got to go low so I can take this turn more easily, that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
the second one had a bunch of jumps, and that fucked up my engine pretty good for that. So you kind of have to watch out for that stuff, but use save states, and that'll be pretty decent. For that, there's Cosmo Gang the Puzzle, which is available, I think, in Arcade Archives on all the consoles, so you can play the arcade version. But
yeah,
this is the Super Famicom version that only came out in Japan in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a, I'd say more of a Puyo Puyo-esque kind of puzzle game.
Yeah.
But you have these little goobers that are in there mixed in with the blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And it eats Tetris style. You have to have the blocks going across. I think it's like 6 or 7 wide to take out a line. But if the goober is in there, it does not count. So you have to, you get this little thing that drops in some of the formations that is like a star that takes out enemies, but only in the direction it goes. So you kind of have to learn the way that how that works. And so, yeah, once you learn that, you kind of get better at it and gets a bit more enjoyable, but it's very much, it's one of those where it's then basically like, what if we can make a puzzle game that's not quite Puyo Puyo, but also not quite Tetris, and just make it a little annoying? That's what they did.
Yep.
Made that game. And they were smart to not release it in North America because nobody would have liked that game.
No, they would not have.
But now you can check it out and use Rewind and all that as you learn how to go. But
yeah,
there's like a campaign mode that is just teaching you essentially how things work. And that is you kind of try to learn a little bit better. And then there's just a basic one player and two player mode. So yeah, pretty decent, but there's obviously much better puzzle games out there.
Oh yes, by a pretty good margin.
Yeah. And the last one is Kunio-kun no Dodgeball Daio Zenin Shugo. A follow-up to main Super Dodgeball game.
Yep.
And this is impenetrable because it's all Japanese text.
Yep.
So I had to look up. There's one GameFAQs walkthrough for this game, and it literally just translates the menus for you.
Yep.
So you can understand what's going on. And so when I uploaded the video for that, I made sure to link that walkthrough to be like, here, this will help you understand what's going on, because unless you know Japanese, this is going to be completely impenetrable.
Yep.
But once I got that going and sort of learned the controls, it works out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, with Rewind, I could just literally undo any bad thing that I did. So I got down to like one person left. I just rewinded any time that my guy got killed. So I managed to win the match.
Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, that's the benefit of having Rewind and save states. You can undo any bad things as you're trying to learn how to play.
Yep.
But it has some cool stages. Like the one I was playing was, I guess, against the Japanese team.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically have this court that's like hanging off of a cliff over like a big, beautiful forest.
Yep.
Almost like a fall time kind of forest. So a lot of oranges and brown leaves and all that kind of stuff. So,
oh yeah.
That was pretty cool. But yeah, definitely get the walkthrough that can tell you what anything means on the interfaces, because otherwise it's impenetrable.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. 4 games. A couple that are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
A couple that are maybe not, but yeah. Then we'll give you something else you can check out. Romancing Saga 2 Revenge of the Seven demo is out now.
Yep.
This is on PlayStation, Switch, and PC. Save data can be carried over to the full game when it launches. I think this is out, yeah, October 24th, so pretty soon.
Mm.
So you can check that out. That is the second of the Romancing Saga games.
Yep.
Because it's a saga game, it means it's probably fine. It's probably not amazing or anything, but it's probably decent enough for what it is. But
yep.
If you can tolerate what's going on, you'll probably enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you probably won't.
Nope.
Saga series, it's like either in or not.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not, definitely don't force yourself.
Yeah, especially so.
So yeah, there you go for that. And yeah, we also got some more news about the 30th anniversary PlayStation celebration that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They announced a line of 30th anniversary products,
mm-hmm.
Which covers both the new PS5 Pro, the regular PS5 Slim, the PlayStation Portal, and DualSense and DualSense Edge
mm-hmm.
controllers. They all got that nice light gray look to them. And though because of the way the DualSense controllers look, it's got an extra bit there around the analog sticks that is sort of a darker gray.
Mm.
But they do color the face buttons on there, which is kind of one of the weird things they did with the DualSense, is kind of just make that all white buttons on there. So kind of get some actual color there. That looks pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
The weird thing in all this announcement is that there's no price mentioned on anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the consoles are special bundles. So the PS5 Pro bundle includes, yeah, all the stuff it normally has, the 2 terabyte SSD and all that, the DualSense controller. Mm-hmm. It also includes a DualSense Edge, the DualSense charging station, a special console cover for the disk drive, should you have that,
mm-hmm.
As well as the vertical stand and some special collector's items.
Mm-hmm.
The original PlayStation controller style cable connector housing. That's for a USB-C cable.
Mm-hmm.
So it has that kind of the little boxy controller, or yeah, the controller port thing on it,
mm-hmm.
To cover it. So it looks really neat when it's plugged in. 4 PlayStation shapes cable ties, PlayStation sticker, limited edition PlayStation poster,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of 30 possible designs, and a PlayStation paperclip for all your needs. The digital edition for the PS5 is similar. It does not include a DualSense Edge. It just includes a regular DualSense controller and the console cover for the disk drive. No charging stand, but it also includes the vertical stand and the same group of collector's item stuff, the cable housing, ties, and all that stuff. So there's that. But the PlayStation Portal just has the same look as the DualSense controllers, as well as the other things. All that stuff will be released November 21st. There'll be 12,300 units of the PS5 Pro console.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing, I want to say, pre-orders on the same day as the PS5 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
It's also going up for pre-order on September 26th. So, yeah, you'll be able to get that on PlayStation Direct. For regions where PlayStation Direct is not available, pre-orders will be available at their local participating retailers. So it seems kind of set up for people to want that cool bundle and then settle for the Pro when they don't get it, the regular Pro. But yeah, it seems like the Pro console bundle, the Portal, and the Edge wireless controller will be available on September 26th to pre-order, whereas the regular PS5 will be available on the October 10th.
Mm-hmm.
And the DualSense would be potentially also be available on the 26th. Kind of worded weirdly, but I think that's what this is saying. Or no, everything is available on September 26th, but other retailers will have the regular PS5 and the DualSense, the regular DualSense on October 10th and September 26th specifically. So if you're waiting for Amazon or Best Buy or whatever, you will get, at least get those two items there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is at PlayStation Direct or participating retailers in other regions.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, these all look pretty nice, so that's cool. They also have special box art, PlayStation 1 style box art for it, for everything but the Pro, I think. The Pro has like a weird white box art to it that sticks out compared to everything else. I feel like that would have been nice to also have that, but otherwise that's pretty cool announcement. So yeah. You can probably spend a lot of money if you want.
Oh, yes. So much money.
So yeah, that'll be fun to see how people get angry about that on the 26th. So,
oh yeah.
Well, that is this week. I forgot about that. So there you go on that. Let's see some more news. Power Wash Simulator's next DLC, the Shrek Special Pack, will finally be out October 10th. So that's good. Looking forward to that. Yeah, that has five new areas to wash as best as you can. I think 10 new achievements and all that. So, yeah, that looks cool. Looking forward to that. Also in October, Minecraft is getting a native PS5 version. They're finally doing an upgrade for that to let it, let's see, it'll have a greater render distance while running at 4K 60 FPS. It'll also feature crossplay with all the other platforms, like the PS4 edition is. And it's a free upgrade. They'll also be selling a physical copy of the game for $30. That includes 3,500 of the Microsoft or Minecraft coin for you to spend on random shit. So,
yep,
probably never have a be able to zero it out. So, enjoy that. I did see the other news about Minecraft is that the PS4. Minecraft Edition is getting the PSVR support taken out next March.
Yep.
Because they don't want to keep supporting it, I guess. So they're removing it. And unfortunately, due to the way they handled all of that, that is unfortunately something they can do pretty easily. So yeah, get in and play with that if you want. Maybe find a way to lock that game down from updating, but I guess you would have to do that by essentially turning off all updates, doing that all manually, which is a big pain in the butt. But yeah, there you go. And next up here, we got a date for Clock Tower Rewind in the West. I guess the one I saw a couple of weeks ago was just for Japan. That was for October 31st in Japan. And in the West, they're getting it 2 days earlier on October 29th. So be able to check that out just before Halloween. Get ready for some game playing on Halloween. So there you go. That'll be fun to see. For people interested in like one of the very first horror games on console. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's that's actually like that game is really good, but prepare yourself because it is kind of slow paced. It is, but yeah.
Yeah. Kind of a big adventure game kind of thing.
It is. And part of the problem is that the character animations can be a little slow, especially when you're trying to move from like one part of the room to the other, but you could also say that that kind of builds the tension as well. So,
yeah. So yeah, that's that one. We did get one surprise announcement that Freedom Wars Remastered is going to be a thing. The Vita game is getting brought to the PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC January 10th. It's being published by Bandai Namco, which is interesting because it was a Sony game back on the Vita. I believe they have essentially licensed it out to Bandai Namco to make it. Yeah, developer is Dimps, the Japanese developer that works on anything. They do not care about any specialties. They will work on anything. Yeah, so this is getting a big visual upgrade. It'll be available on the platforms that support it, 4K, 60 FPS, upgraded textures and all that. Yeah, they're adding difficulty settings, other gameplay changes, overhauled weapon crafting system. Never heard of this game before. Basically, the Vita did not get any Monster Hunter games because those were all exclusive to the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
And so company said, what if we make our own Monster Hunter clones for the Vita?
Yeah.
And this is one of them. This was Sony's attempt at that. For a big co-op action RPG kind of thing. The story is pretty interesting. As it says here, for the crime of existing, your 1 million year sentence begins today.
Mm-hmm.
In a dystopian future, the world is ravaged by pollution and depletion of natural resources. Humanity lives in sprawling prison complexes called panopticons.
Mm-hmm.
They, when born into this hellscape, are deemed sinners. Players seek their freedom by volunteering for extremely dangerous combat operations.
Mm-hmm.
You compete with other panopticons for what remains of the planet's dwindling resources. Almost like anime Suicide Squad, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It was a pretty solid game. But, yeah, it did not take off, obviously. And,
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, now people are going to be able to check it out here on mm-hmm. January 10th. So,
mm-hmm.
That'll be pretty cool to see. Okay, I see why Dimps is working on it, because the director of the original game mm-hmm. is working over there. So they got hired as the developers for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's cool. Be able to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And we got one more announcement here. One more game being announced. This is, let's say, a bit of a surprise. It is like a dragon game, but maybe not one you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very ridiculous name. Like a Dragon, Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii.
Yep. You're basically playing Goro in as a pirate.
Yeah, it'll be featuring Goro Majima
mm-hmm.
Being his weird self as a pirate Yakuza in Hawaii, I guess. So they'll be reusing that whole area, all those areas from Infinite Wealth for this. It'll be out February 28th.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's definitely not what I think anybody would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
As their next project, so yeah. As I say, you're embarking on an over-the-top modern-day pirate adventure with an ex-Yakuza, now pirate captain, and his mm-hmm. crew as they engage in exhilarating combat on land and sea in the hunt for lost memories and a legendary treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe this is going to be back in the beat-em-up mold
mm-hmm.
of Yakuza games, so yeah. They mentioned switching between the Mad Dog and pirate fighting styles
mm-hmm.
For that. Yeah, so that'll be fun. Yeah, this is a Goro Majima that has lost his memory
mm-hmm.
As a once feared legend in the Yakuza world.
Mm-hmm.
Sets sail in search of treasure. Actually thinks he's a pirate, so he goes to Hawaii.
Yep.
And tries to find treasure, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he'll figure out and get his memory back. Who knows? We'll see. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, this looks cool. So yeah. Oh, I guess you get a little tiger buddy.
Mm.
So yeah. A lot of weird shit in this article. So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's one to look forward to next year.
Mm-hmm.
Though also happening next year, as I think most people would have expected, the big Skate reboots that EA has been working on for quite a while is planning to launch in early access next year.
Mm-hmm.
Not really a huge surprise. It did not seem it was going to be coming out anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, seems like it'll be launching in early access. I don't know if that's just on PC
mm-hmm.
or anything, but yeah. Not really too much in the way of details here. Seems like they would probably announce a date at the Game Awards, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They just announced they had a big trailer for it at Summer Game Fest, where Tim Robinson was the spokesperson for the corporation, the Big Bad mm-hmm. Corporation. So, yeah. Looking forward to that. See what the hell that is. But, yeah, that'll be also next year at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, for more EA news, we also found out, unsurprisingly, they're going to make another Star Wars Jedi game.
Yep.
They are describing as the final chapter in the series.
Yep.
Respawn will be making it, so yeah, unsurprising. Especially as they've had like 40 million people play them with mm-hmm. the two games, so yeah. looking forward to more of that because those two games have been very good.
Yep.
That's pretty much it. It's not a huge surprise at all.
No, and I mean, honestly, you know, those two games were pretty much the games that sort of broke the Star Wars game curse, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go on that. Let's get to some industry news here.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, we found out more about what's going on with the Flappy Bird game and what's up with the Flappy Bird Foundation.
Basically, they're a bunch of thieves.
Well, not really. They are, as the way they describe them in their announcement, is that they are a team of passionate fans of the Flappy Bird game published in 2013. Mm-hmm. But in response to a bunch of questions from people, they decided to post this statement on their Twitter account,
mm-hmm.
Basically saying here, the Flappy Bird trademark registration.
Mm.
The Flappy Bird Foundation is a team of passionate fans of the Flappy Bird game published in 2013. Mm. After the game was pulled from stores in 2014, like many others, we found ourselves unable to stop thinking about the game. What they mean there is they were unable to stop thinking about making money off the game. The Flappy Bird trademark and brand was abandoned following the game's takedown. Wanting to revive the game, we filed an application for the trademark and set out to bring the Flappy Bird game back to the community. The fine print in 2018, the United States Patent and Trademark Office granted Mobile Media Partners, Inc. the Flappy Bird trademark registration, mm-hmm. which was then acquired by Game Tech Holdings, LLC in 2021, who we then acquired the trademark from in August 2024. Mm. There's a community note on this saying the trademark was seized in court by Game Tech Holdings, LLC is not approved by its original creator, Dong Wen.
Mm-hmm.
And he has also said, in response to this news, no, I have not. I have no relation with the game. Mm-hmm. I did not sell anything. I also don't support crypto.
Yeah.
Very to the point.
Yep.
Then they talked about the developer that's working on this, Pio Pio. This section's called Pio Pio versus Cactus. As they brought on Keck, the developer of the game Pio Pio versus Cactus, as a core founding member of the Flappy Bird Foundation. We know the similarities between the game Keck, first published in 2009, and Flappy Bird, which first published in 2013. The gameplay, level design, and the main character all appear strikingly similar. Keck has always been an enthusiastic supporter of the Flappy Bird Foundation and our plans to build on the legacy of his game and Flappy Bird, mm-hmm. so much so that he has decided to trust the foundation with the exclusive rights to Pio Pio versus Cactus. I guess I got a quote from him here. I love that through the Flappy Bird Foundation, we were able to breathe new life into the games I built and inspired. It's incredible to work alongside such a dedicated team of fans and creators who are truly passionate. And they posted a picture, I guess, of what Pio Pio versus Cactus must look like.
Mm.
And it looks like a shit. I'd say it does not look interesting at all.
Yeah.
As the bird has like big giant lips instead of a beak.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it looks. I don't know. Almost looks like, say, Mr. Popo's lips.
Well, keep in mind, you know, that I'm pretty sure that character was more or less sort of kind of copy and pasted from Super Mario World.
Yeah,
which is very obvious if you look at that game in its original form, and it's like, yeah, a lot of this comes from Super Mario World. The pipes that, you know, Flappy Bird's going to, the character design, the wings, it's very obvious, yeah. Let me put it that way.
Well, I'm talking about Pio Pio versus Cactus. They have a comparison here of the look between
them. Yeah, definitely, I see it. Oh, yeah, oh, wow, wow.
Which is like, yeah, this looks like decent for like a little mobile gamer flash game, but
yeah.
But also, this style of game is not like new at all.
Yeah, it's not. When Flappy Bird
came out or Pio Pio came out,
mm-hmm.
Was it Chopper or something like that? That was like a big flash game where your helicopter flying through a cave that had this kind of thing with mm-hmm. like stalactites and stalagmites kind of popping out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Similar kind of thing. It's not a a new style of game anyway. But as they say here, going forward, the mission of the Flappy Bird Foundation has always been to preserve the and foster the Flappy Bird game and legacy for the community. Fine print: in August 2024, the Flappy Bird trademark registration was transferred to the Flappy Bird Foundation, whose role is to act as the steward of the Flappy Bird IP and ecosystem, placing the ownership of both the Flappy Bird trademark and the rights to POPO versus Cactus with the foundation as the final step in our preparation to return Flappy Bird to the community. We believe that diverse opinions of passionate gamers can only make this project stronger. Keep on flapping. This is a lot of the people that are behind this company is basically crypto people, NFT people. And so it makes a lot of sense. The way they're being weirdly honest here is that they would shortcut making a game that is popular and makes money is by basically getting the IP for a game that used to exist, getting the trademark at least, and then making something that's similar and then trading off of that name to make money and attention and all that. So that seems basically what they've been doing, and that makes sense for what they're doing, which is to take all the shortcuts they can versus develop something that actually makes money on its own merits versus trading off of a name that was big 10 years ago and then no longer has anything to, it's a dead IP, essentially. But hey, how are you going to make money if you can't get the original person on board? You just rip them off.
Yep.
And yeah, so the chief creative behind the Flappy Bird Revival is Michael Roberts. He's the head of studio at 1208 Productions, a mobile game developer previously described on its website as a pioneer in the Web3 space, which is what crypto NFT stuff is based on. Which their previous projects have included multiple NFT-based games. And so, yeah. Yeah, there's an article acknowledged by Michael Roberts on Blockchain Reporter, which states Flappy Bird's return takes a boost from strategic collaborations with chief names in the Web3 sector. What's more, the game's first season on Telegram gives players the chance to take part in a free-of-cost mining event. So, yeah. That's what they are doing here. So if you were pleasantly surprised and hoping for something that seems potentially good up front, cancel those plans.
Yeah.
Expect the worst here and see how this thing looks when it actually launches. So yeah. Let me see here. Our next up story is the big story of the week. Nintendo has filed a lawsuit against Nintendo and the Pokemon Company filed a lawsuit against Power World developer Pocket Pair. Not over design infringement or anything, but patent infringement. So not necessarily because they are ripping off Pokemon designs, which they are for the most part, and combining designs and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, the main thing here is they say they filed a patent infringement lawsuit in the Tokyo District Court against Pocket Pair on September 18th, 2024.
Yeah.
This lawsuit seeks an injunction against against infringement and compensation for damages on the grounds that Power World, a game developed and released by the defendant, infringes multiple patent rights. And yeah, this seems to go off of a lot of weird patents that they have been applying for in the last handful of years. I don't know if they've brought up specifically which ones they are infringing. I think Pocket Pair has put out a statement basically that, here it is. We have received notice of this lawsuit and will begin the appropriate legal proceedings and investigations into the claims of patent infringement. At this moment, we are unaware of the specific patents we are accused of infringing upon, and we have not been notified of such details. But it's been suggested they have a variety of patents of like the notion of throwing a Pokeball at a Pokemon, that kind of thing, as well as say patents for highlighting your character when it's behind a tree, which, you know, a bunch of Mario games and whatnot that Nintendo makes has. But yeah, unsurprising they would find a means for filing suit against them, and that it maybe wouldn't necessarily be the designs themselves, because that's a whole big mess to go through. As I'm sure their lawyers have very much looked at that, try to figure out where the line is for that. That the easier thing would be a sort of patent infringement thing.
Yeah.
Based on the various things, because, well, both these games are very different for the most part. There are obviously aspects of, you know, catching the pals in essentially Pokeballs and throwing those to have them come out and help fight. That kind of stuff is pretty similar. So I'm curious what specific examples they have for that, but yeah, otherwise not really a ton to go off of here. But yeah, just not a surprising legal thing that Nintendo would go through for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if you got anything to add on that.
The only thing I have to add is that apparently there's been word going around that one of the artists who apparently used to work for Pocket Pair, who quit, he is really pissed at the company because, according to them, when they were working there, they were actually trying to come up with like original character designs, but the people who head the company were essentially telling them, no, we want you to do it just close enough to Pokemon that it'll like show up on Twitch or whatever. So according to them, like, they knew for a fact that they were actively trying to skirt the line for for plagiarism with the Pokemon company. But yeah, it all comes off very shady.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a lot of their designs are very much like legally distinct Pikachu.
Yeah.
Legally distinct Raichu, you know.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff that is in there.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a tough thing to fight. I think, what was it? I think Capcom back in the day, Sue, I think it was SNK over, or...
Or it was either SNK, or I think it might have been Data East.
Yeah, it might have been Data East over their fighting game that had very similar kind of archetype designs for characters.
I can't remember if it was either Power Instinct or Fighter's Destiny. It was one of those. And yeah, I think it was Fighter's Destiny. Because yeah, it had very similar
Fighter's archetype. History.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a lawsuit back from 1994. So yeah. I think, yeah, ruled that there was strong evidence that Data East set out to imitate the success of Street Fighter II, noting similarities such as a Chun-Li clone and several comparable special moves. The court noted that of the 8 pairs of characters, 27 special moves at issue, 3 characters embodied special moves in Fighter's history are similar to protectable characters and special moves in Street Fighter II. Although the court determined that several moves were similar, the court also noted that Street Fighter II has a total universe of 12 characters and 650 moves.
Yeah.
Capcom concedes, as it must, that the vast majority of the moves are unprotectable because they are commonplace kicks and punches.
Yeah. And also because there's like a very distinct mechanic in Fighter's history games that does differentiate them from Street Fighter, which is the armor mechanic that they have, where if you attack certain parts of their body, there are pieces of armor that will come off and they'll start taking more damage, which is something that Street Fighter has, to my knowledge, never done.
Yeah.
Also, that game had frickin', what was it? Karnov as like the final boss. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was very clear what their inspirations were, but they just they had enough different that it didn't meet the legal definition of just being complete ripoffs.
Yeah. Data East was a very interesting company. I did like a whole random factoid about them months ago, But like they, you know, most people, a lot of people will probably remember them for pinball because they were a really big, you know, pinball manufacturer. But the game series they did do were very kind of off the wall type stuff. You know, like I mentioned, Karnov, for example, really good example. That's literally a platformer where you play like some weird, like Russian Mongol strongman, you know, or, you know, who breathes fire. Or there was that other game where it was like a infinite runner type thing where you're playing this dude who was like a, he kind of looked like a Henshin hero. And that guy ended up becoming like the final boss for like the sequel to Fighter's history. And then there was their like Glory of Heracles, which was their RPG series that was based around Greek mythology, instead of, you know, the what Dragon Quest did. And then also there was the fact that, you know, they had a side business making, you know, manufacturing dried mushrooms and condoms. Just they it was a funny, it was just a real oddball of a video game company.
So yeah, that's kind of the news here, because everyone should think like a pure art design kind of thing would maybe run into the same thing of like you've got hundreds of Pokemon, and this one has like elements of like two or three, but you don't necessarily own the rights to the concept of birds.
No. They also don't really own the concept of like the whole Pocket Monster thing either, because there was at least one game that came out before that that was sort of similar. But anyway, we've stayed too far on this topic, so
It's an interesting lawsuit, but there's not really much in the way of details, specific details yet. I imagine they're probably more like a settlement of sorts. Just pay them some of that money you've made selling several million copies and move on with your day. For that, and let Nintendo have their win, I guess. But yeah, our last one here involves the newly finalized Saber Interactive company, particularly CEO Matt Karch, who has made some waves recently since the launch of Space Marine 2, basically by commenting on YouTube videos, particularly ones of people that tend to create these sort of anti-woke videos saying like, oh, this is a victory for us, even though we were whining earlier this year about Lady Space Marines, how that was not allowed. But the people in charge of the Warhammer stuff basically being like, you know what, there's some women too. People lost their fucking minds. He posted a comment on this video being like, oh, we're going back. The video called Space Marine 2 is a reminder of what we lost. By YouTuber Legendary Drops, in which he praised the game for its gruesome combat, beautiful presentation, and celebration of Warhammer 40K world and lore. Try to juxtapose it with modern games that are either live service hamster wheels or single player experiences that feel narratively convoluted and full of bloated gameplay systems. But he also talked about the game oozing with so much masculinity that I feel like I've been in a desert for the last few years. How it has themes, quote, themes nobody wants to go near anymore, like for courage and honor, for brotherhood, for the Emperor. Legendary Drops went on to praise the limited banter among the characters, calling out games that eschew simple good and evil characters and more stoic dialogue. So I was like, I don't know that the Space Marines are necessarily much of a verbose group. They seem very much like the guys that are dropped in to handle the killing and solve, conflicts, which is really what they exist for. Like the same was the case of the original game, the original Space Marine game, where it's a good third person shooter that was just no frills outside of the fact they had a multiplayer mode and all that, but that seems very much like what you would do because this is a game being made on a pretty decent budget, but they're not going out of their way to make something that's going to be, an Overwatch 2 or a Destiny 2 or anything like that. I don't think there's any loot or anything in that game. So yeah, being used for that. But yeah, the video didn't blow up until a few days later when YouTuber Asmongold, who, if you don't know, the recent like resurgence of essentially what is being called Gamergate 2.0, he was very much one of the key people kind of kickstarting that, along with Mark Kern, also known as Grums. It was a big proponent of the original Gamergate. It was just a whiny baby man.
Yeah. And he's one of those people who likes whose like ego outsizes their actual accomplishments.
Yeah, because people wonder like, who the hell is this guy? And he's like, he was at Blizzard when they made all those games that people liked.
Yeah. And he wasn't even like a designer or anything. He was just one of the
programmers. Yeah, it's like what he did there was just he existed.
Yeah.
He acts like he is a big gaming figure as a result.
Yeah, and then he went on and tried to start his own company. They had a game that was being made. You may or may not have heard of it. It was called Firefall.
Yeah, the game that you only know because of conventions.
Yeah, it became infamous because of the overbloated publicity stunts they tried to do, including the infamous Firefall bus that I think never actually got used. It just like ended up in like a warehouse somewhere.
I think somebody bought that bus at some point.
I think they did. And also just the fact that it later came out that there was like a bunch of asset theft in that game as well, at least in its first version. And then he's basically spent the last few years claiming to be working on a game, and the actual progress is almost non-existent. There's like a demo and that's about it. And him constantly like, you know, trolling for more funding.
Yeah.
So basically he's a con artist is what we're saying.
Yeah. Luckily, I don't think many people are funding that thing.
Only a handful of his, you know, his own little personality cult, I guess. Yeah.
He's trying to get the, get big enough to do direct subscriptions on Twitter, and I don't think people are taking to that.
No.
So yeah, it's just kind of a, he's just a grifter.
Mm-hmm.
Barely notable other than he posts a lot about anything.
Yeah.
And it's been funny about this game because people are posting that the woke game industry is going to kill this game, or this game is going to die because of woke, because it's woke. And then it does well, and they're like, we saved this game from the woke mob. And it's like, you guys, anything is woke, depending on whether it's good or bad. That's basically what it is at this point.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this whole thing is a part of that. Says, Asmongold, who is just a shitty person as well, posted an hour-long reaction to... Go ahead.
All you need to know about Asmongold is that he is a fairly well-off streamer who chooses to live like a pig.
Yeah.
Like, there have been a lot of jokes about how awful the room, how gross and grody-looking the room is that he streams in. Apparently, it goes further than that, too. Apparently, he doesn't brush his teeth very often. It's just overall, he's just a really gross human being.
Yeah. And so he basically posted a nearly hour-long reaction to this video, agreeing with most of what Legendary Drops said. The problem is not that modern games have complex characters. The problem is that their idea of a complex character is a self-indulgent loser that doesn't have any charisma. And that's, that's the reason why I remember I had to read The Catcher in the Rye, and I hated that book so much, and I feel like the reason why I hated the book is because I thought the main character, like Holden Caulfield, or whatever, was the biggest simp loser pussy bitch that I've ever, like, just such a loser. I bet the people that fucking write stuff like fucking Dustborn or whatever, they love that, so they think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, boy, that just seems like you don't like reading specific kinds of books, but...
Yeah.
Also, that you didn't learn anything from any reading. You don't read for just personal...
enjoyment kind of or anything. It's also really funny considering that you're not supposed to necessarily like or agree with Holden Caulfield. Like, the book kind of, if you read any fewer than, about 30 pages, it becomes pretty clear that, occasionally he likes to think that he's like wise beyond his years or whatever, but he really isn't. He's just a jaded kid who is convinced that he's the only real person in the world.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that whole thing that happened, and I happened to have a comment on this that let's see. Yeah, a comment from Matt Karch saying, let's see, hey man, CEO of Saber here, I love your videos. When we signed the deal to make Space Marine 2, all I wanted was a throwback game. We had the chance to work on something which by its nature was old school. I can't even comprehend many of the current games that we play these days. They are too complex and too much of an investment. Then continued on, we worked on Halo back in the day. That game could be distilled down to the simplest of shooting loops, but it was entirely addicting. That is what we wanted to recapture. I hope the games like Space Marine 2 and Wukong are the start of a reversion to a time when games are simply about fun and immersion. I spent some time as chief operating officer at Embracer, and I saw games there that made me want to cry with their overblown attempts at messaging or imposing morals on gamers. We just want to do some glory kills and get the heart rate up a little. For me, that is what games should be about.
Nobody said you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like what?
Like,
Where the
Doom
hell did this?
happens for a
Yeah,
reason.
Doom happens, for God's sakes. It is. We had Astrobot recently, and that game is, a cute little platformer. There was, just where does, I swear to God, every single one of these people have this weird ass persecution complex. Like they're always the victim. You're not a
Yeah.
victim.
It's because they grew up when games were aimed squarely at white male boys. And now that games are made for more than just that, they are all being shoved down their throats in a way
Yeah.
that they don't like because, hey, these are games that maybe people that like story, like narrative, like seeing more variety of people in it.
Yeah.
And that is bad news for them because they're being wiped out of games. And not really,
It's
but.
not real. And no, it's like, oh, this game is what? Well, then don't buy it. Don't play it.
No, it's part of the culture war now.
Yeah, you're going to go on a freaking comment section and say, oh, this game looks woke. I'm not going to buy it. Well, then don't. You guys
Yeah.
go on and on about freaking virtue signaling. Look who's talking.
Yeah, and then they, like Dustborn was mentioned, that's a game where these kind of people literally flock to their Twitter account to harass the every single post that they did to try to harass the people working there. And find anybody that labels themselves as being a developer at that studio and working on that game and harass them as well to make a point that they can be shitty too and all that. And yeah, mentioning, this getting around on Twitter to those kind of people with positive responses fluctuating between things like you are doing God's work and I'm glad we got games failing hard. They have pronouns in them. Like, who the fuck plays these DEI games?
Lot of people. A lot of those games you keep going on and about, most of them sell pretty well.
Yeah, and that's this whole weird thing that's, like I mentioned earlier, where they were hedging their bets that maybe Space Marine 2 wouldn't do well because it's, and claim that it's woke, and that's why it didn't do well, but then it did well, and so it beat back the woke mob. It's that kind of stupid, like if it does well, it's not woke, obviously. And if it doesn't do well, it's obviously because it's woke. Not could not be other reasons or anything like that. That's kind of simple black and white framing of all this shit that just looks real stupid. But yeah, people looked at the YouTube account to see like is it actually his? It was created in May of this year. The bio reads CEO of Saber Interactive. Generic male of support of sorts, lover of loud guitars, violent games, fast cars, and all sorts of whiskey. The generic bullshit, but the dog here comment contacted Saber Interactive to get an idea if that actually was him, and they declined to go into specifics, saying Saber's not commenting on this matter. But then later on, Karch commented about it on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. They got a questionnaire saying, whoever wrote that seems pretty sharp. Mm. Seems like him basically saying, like, yeah, I wrote that. I'm a smart-ass guy.
Yeah.
That person's really cool, because that's me. It's like, Jesus Christ, guy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make yourself seem like the smartest person in the fucking world for making a good Warhammer game.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's this whole stupid thing that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
As people that, you know, obviously want to avoid the stupid anti-woke mob.
Yeah.
Seeing this guy that's running Saber now, I'd be like, man, I don't want to fucking deal with this guy's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they start making all their decisions based on that. Because if you look at all at what Saber Interactive has been making of late, they make a lot of shit at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They're a very big developer. They own a bunch of subsidiaries and such. So I'm trying to pull up a list here. Their more recent stuff. Warhammer Sports, Space Marine 2. Teardown last year was published by them. Mudrunner, that stuff pretty recently has been. Roadcraft coming up is them. Kingdom Come Deliverance is one of their games. Expeditions, the Mudrunner game, is them. The John Carpenter game, whatever the hell that comes out. Toxic Commando.
Mm-hmm.
The new A Quiet Place, the Road Ahead game.
Yep.
Out soon as them. Wildcard Football, Gloomhaven, World War Z game. Yeah, ton of games that they have been working on, and they got stuff coming up as well. Like that Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake is still supposedly happening at some point.
Mm.
The Jurassic Park Survival game, a bunch of others. So it's like, if you're trying to avoid them for the actions of the CEO, like that's going to be tough, because they make and publish a bunch of stuff. Mm. So that's another thing to watch out for when you're looking at games that are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's just the social media bullshit of the week there.
Mm-hmm.
As a CEO feeling like he's the smartest person in the entire world.
Mm.
And showing his ass for people that give a shit about if the CEO is a shitty person or not. So yeah, there you go. And that's the note we'll be ending on this week. For that, we got a bunch of games coming out this week. I believe the Zelda game is out this week. Let me see here. Yeah, here we go. Aura History Untold, we mentioned, is out this week. Epic Mickey Rebrushed is out this week. There's Balatro's on mobile this week. The G.I. Joe beat-em-up game is out on PC this week. It's coming to consoles later. Let's see. Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom is out on Friday. Lollipop Chainsaw is out in Japan. The remake of Night Slashers is out this week. Shadows of Doubt is out this week. Worms Armageddon Anniversary Edition is also out this week. EA Sports FC 25. Another Five Nights at Freddy's game is out this week. That Looney Tunes Wacky World of Sports is out this week. And yeah, that's Raynatus is also out this week. So a lot of stuff. A big variety of stuff there. So that's some things you can check out for this week. Thank you, Brandon, for joining this week.
Yeah, always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. We'll be able to talk about Zelda stuff. Hopefully. So thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers that aren't going to post the smuggest comments on YouTube.
Yeah.
Don't post comments at all unless you're saying nice things about good people.
Seriously.
Avoid the shitty side of YouTube, because you got better things to do with your time than that.
Seriously, it's not worth it.
Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.